U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The world intrudes on President Trump as Vladimir Putin escalates Russian aggression against Ukraine, and a trade negotiation looms on the weekend with China at the G20 meeting in Argentina. How will Mr. Trump respond? What will be the outcome? We'll try to talk about that. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot here from the Wall Street Journal Potomac Watch podcast with my colleague Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
So let's start out with Russia. The in escalation by Vladimir Putin with the Russian Navy seizing three Ukrainian vessels, taking 24 sailors captive, and following weeks and I guess even months of harassment of Ukrainian vessels in the Sea of Azov, which is a body of water that is adjacent to the Black Sea. It's got Ukrainian land on one part of it and otherwise Russian territory. The two countries have a treaty that allows for joint use of the sea. But the Russians have seemingly been trying to make it into a Russian lake and trying to harass the Ukrainians. And that poses a real challenge for Donald Trump, because remember how critical he was, Kim, of Barack Obama for allowing Russia to seize Crimea and doing nothing. Now Putin seems to be challenging Donald Trump. After a period in which Putin tried to court Trump, now this looks like a provocation, and it's going to be interesting to see how Trump responds.
Well, Trump was right to criticize Obama because it was an outrageous act by Putin taking over Crimea 5 years ago. And Ukraine has never managed to get back that land. And what we're seeing happening here is the Kerch Strait, which is what connects the Sea of Azov with the Black Sea. They are attempting to and runs along the Crimea. They are attempting to now solidify and further their control over all of that land and the waters around it, so much so that President Putin even has been erecting a 12-mile bridge connecting the Russian mainland to the Crimea to make it clear that this all belongs to them. And now, obviously, this latest step of going after the warships, which comes on the back, as you said, of months of harassing commercial ships going through there. And I think the worry here that if Trump does not take some definitive action to make it clear that this is unacceptable, Putin is going to not just continue that and try to expand upon Russian holdings, but, you know, he may be tempted to go after yet other longtime desires of the old Russians who'd like to see the great reassembly of the bigger Russian state. And that could be places like the Baltics, which are obviously NATO members and would require our NATO members to move to defend them. It would obviously be an enormous escalation. So the time to deal with this is now. And with the G20 coming up, the obvious first step is to say you are canceling that meeting until Russia makes some concessions, whether it be releasing sailors or some other demand on the part of the United States and Europeans.
Yeah, no, you don't mean not cancel the G20. That's going ahead.
No,
you mean the side meeting between
Putin
and Trump, which has been scheduled on the sidelines of the G20. But so far, President Trump has said, look, I'm not happy with the aggression. He said it a couple of times. Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, denounced the aggression in no uncertain terms. So did Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State. So rhetorically, there's been some pushback, although from Trump, just that clipped those clipped words. And he's gotten some criticism for not doing enough in response so far. I think some of that's unfair because he has, and his administration has criticized it. So you need to think about how else you would respond. So I think so far to jump to the conclusion, and I think there's an impulse, of course, on the part of Trump's critics to jump to conclusions that he's somehow in the tank for Putin at every step. Let's see what he does do, Kim. And I think that your suggestion of not having that meeting is a very good one because, of course, Putin covets the international standing. He covets the attention, especially back home in Russia, of saying, see, I can do all these things that further Russian interests and or territory, and the world still treats me well. But there are other things we could do, aren't there?
Lots of things. And look, and I think the criticism, it obviously, it comes on the back of that meeting that Putin and Trump had in Finland, in which the president didn't have his best showing. And he did come across as being way too weak on Russia in terms of Russia's interference in our 2016 elections and also its human rights abuses. But I think that actually escalates the need for Trump to take a firm line this time. Now, he says he is waiting to get a full report back on the situation and to talk with his advisors, and that's prudent. I think, as you said, he's taken the right steps so far. He immediately criticized it, and then they've got to sit down and come up with a bigger package. And there are lots of things you could do. It would be best if whatever is done in cooperation with Europeans in order to present a united front, and also because Europeans are more of a linchpin in terms of Russia's economy. One thing, for instance, you could do is Germany, if it got up the guts, could say that it was shutting down plans to make the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is Russia's new hope of getting natural gas into Europe. There are a lot of people who've been critical of it, saying that it provides Russia with a lot more leverage over Europe, with United States natural gas exports increasing. Europe has an outlet instead that they wouldn't necessarily have to go that way. You could do targeted sanctions against banks or against specific individuals that were involved in this incident. Another thought I've seen, which I kind of like, especially if it was done united between the United States and Europe, is maybe you say that Russian ships are not going to be allowed to port at your docks for a while until this situation gets resolved.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think the Nord Stream 2 idea would probably be the biggest immediate hit on Russia. The problem there is that Trump doesn't have very good relationships these days in Europe, Western Europe. And though he's been banging on Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, on the Nord Stream 2 project, and there's an emerging body of criticism inside Germany to the Nord Stream project. There aren't too many European leaders these days who want to make concessions to Trump's diplomacy. and that's a cost that I think he's paying for some of his rough treatment of the allies. But it's an excellent suggestion, and is one that if the U.S. wanted to, it would I think it might be able to get some traction inside Europe. So we're going to watch and see what happens here. I think it's an important moment for Trump dealing with Putin because it'll set the tone for the relationship here the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I think anything that happens, you have to ask yourself, why is Putin doing this? And because that gets to the question of how do you most then go after him? And obviously, some of this Putin is known for doing these actions at opportunistic moments. He may well have looked and seen, you know, Trump, we just went through a midterm in which Trump and his party lost. There's a bit of disarray. Things have been happening in France. There's protests over fuel prices. And he might have thought, well, no one's looking. Let's see what I can get away with. But the other reason is if you look within Russia, he has suffered a significant decline in his own approval ratings, and that is a result of a flagging Russian economy. And so to the extent that you can respond to this by doing things that further threaten that economic progress in Russia, it probably will have more meaning to Vladimir Putin.
All right. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal as we're talking about Donald Trump's foreign policy.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
You can now listen to Potomac Watch on your Amazon smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot talking with Kim Strassel about some important foreign policy meetings that President Trump is going to have potentially here and decisions to make. Well, big meeting this Saturday, dinner at the edges of the G20 meeting in Buenos Aires with President Xi Jinping of China. And the top of the list of things to talk about is trade, and in particular whether or not the United States and China can put together some kind of a deal, or at least the beginnings of the discussions and a framework of a deal that would call a truce to the trade war that's been taking place, where Donald Trump has imposed 10% tariffs on billions of dollars worth of Chinese exports, and threatening to escalate that to more than a 25% tariff rate on something like $250 billion worth of Chinese goods, and then down the road on even more Chinese goods. China has retaliated with negative consequences for the U.S. farm belt, as soybean sales have dried up, cranberry sales, a lot of sales to China have suffered, Kim. And the costs of inputs for U.S. manufacturers have also gone up. So a lot of discussion about whether or not this will happen. Mixed signals, though, from the White House. It's very hard for me to divine what's going to happen.
Yeah, it seems like what's happening, just reading, trying to read into that opaque situation, is that for the moment, the United States continues outwardly to engage in a lot of tough talk and say, well, you know, we've got our demands, China needs to meet them. And if they don't, well, if you look at our two economies, ours is in a far better situation to weather the fallout of this than China's. And so we have more staying power, as it were. But behind the scenes, it seems to be pretty clear that they are very concerned, as they should be, about what this ongoing trade war is doing to markets, financial markets, and also potentially to the broader economy. You know, we talked yesterday about what's happening to GM and its layoffs, and, you know, at least part of that is connected to the higher costs of steel and tariffs. So there are issues in which this is really hurting different sectors of the United States economy, as you mentioned, the farm belt. So the question when they go in there is how much is tough talk and how much are they, in fact, willing to make a deal? And when you look at that, there's some rival factions within the White House. You have people that really are arguing to try to put this behind you. That's folks like Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Larry Kudlow, the economic advisor. But pitted against them on the other side are trade hardliners like the U.S. trade rep Robert Lighthizer and Peter Navarro. And all of these folks will be present in G20.
Yeah, it's hard to read because they're all lobbying for Trump's attention. I would add one other voice, Kim, to the trade hawk side in this, and that's Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who has been heavily influenced, I am told, by Michael Pillsbury's book on China, and Pillsbury's book describes what he says as China's campaign for strategic and military dominance over the United States to become the world's greatest power. And Kushner is influenced by that. And in fact, so are other people inside the administration. So there is a question in my mind. I mean, the economists like Mnuchin, Trump, what they want, and Kudlow, they want a deal that doesn't interfere with economic growth, doesn't interfere with the economic rebound that has taken place under Trump. 3% growth for the last two quarters, maybe down in the fourth quarter a little bit, but 3% for the year. They want to keep that going. And yet the trade tensions have contributed to, I think, a reduction in business certainty, some caution about investment, and that is hurting growth. Now, that's pitted on the other side against the people you described, some of whom they believe that there is this strategic competition with China and that we need to take a much harder line and that a trade truce would complicate that that longer-term strategy.
Well, look, it is a very thorny situation. You mentioned Pillsbury's book. There is a real problem with intellectual property theft from China and also these forced technology transfers where China, in essence, demands that if companies are going to sell or create products in their company, in their country, that they bring along with them trade secrets and their newest technology and make it available to China. And all of this is strategically, it is a bit concerning. The question is, do you only deal with that via trade negotiations? Or do you instead see it as one lever? There are other things the United States can do in terms of trying to enforce international trade agreements or coming back at China with tough talk and to try to get them to change their approach on these things beyond just trade. So that's some of the factors that have got to go into a decision here, which is, is the overall economy worth sticking it all on a one bet in terms of trade with China over these issues?
Well, and you had for 8 years under President Obama, I think, were in a position where his tut-tutting was purely rhetorical. He did nothing really to suggest to China, or very little, that there was any consequence to predatory trade behavior. And it escalated in part because China was pushing on that open door. So I think Trump now is in the administration at least calling China on its abusive behavior. The question is, do they think they're serious? And is Xi Jinping going to say, the Chinese president say, all right, look, we will do some things on intellectual property, for example. We will end cyber raids on American institutions. We will do something about the bureaucratic harassment in China of American business with enforcement actions and forced turnover of intellectual property. And by the way, we will also make sure that we buy more American goods. So that all of that together, I think, is an agenda that Xi could put on the table. Would Trump accept it? I think he probably would, or at least say, look, okay, I'll postpone my tariffs in January, the new tariffs, while we negotiate these things. That wouldn't satisfy Navarro. That might not satisfy some others. But I do think it would begin to set the framework for a possible deal and a resetting of U.S.-China relations, which we could really use.
Well, I think you put your finger potentially on the way forward for a deal, which is a delay strategy, meaning that you don't – I mean, look, maybe they'll all go in there and come out with a grand bargain. And we know that Trump does like those grand bargains sometimes. He likes to be able to come out and say, look, I got a deal. But perhaps the more strategic way to do this is to say, look, we'll delay raising those tariffs. We'll hold off the addition of yet more tariffs, which have been talked about in the last week, and will potentially work toward even reducing the tariffs that are there, but contingent upon China showing a new, actions and attitudes toward these important issues of ours, for instance, intellectual property. And that could be the way to do it, sort of trust but verify, as it were, and slowly. But it would also, more importantly, even that would send an important message to the economy and to the markets that there is a way out of this.
And when you look at what's happened in the markets over the course of the last 3 or 4 months, much of the gyration up and down, the volatility has been related to trade policy. When people think that there's going to be – investors think there's going to be some kind of a truce or a deal, they tend to react positively. When it looks like there's going to be an extended row and more tariffs, they tend to go down. Now, that's not the only factor influencing the markets, obviously. Global growth is, obviously, the Federal Reserve. But the trade politics has influenced the markets. And Donald Trump, as we know, he follows the stock market. So that may have a potential to influence him. Thanks, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week. with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.